I'm Steve Miller, and coming up on today's show, as it is the first Friday of the month, we'll have Nature's Almanac straight after headlines. After that, we'll have a report on efforts to divest the state's workers' pension plan, PERA, from fossil fuels. Then, despite the snow, organizers of this year's Winter Walk and Bike to Work Month are hoping to entice commuters out of their cars and into alternative transportation. At 8:30, it's Connections, and today, Kathy Partridge is your host. She'll be speaking with two leaders of the Colorado Association for Public Education Policy. They'll be talking about school privatization, corporatization, and a current bill in the state legislature about campaign finance reform for school board elections. But first, a list of school closures and delays due to the snow, and it is in alphabetical order. Adams 12 five-star schools, there's a two-hour delay. Adams County School District 14, closed. Auroria Campus, which opens at 9 a.m. for the delay. Byers School District, closed. Cherry Creek School District, closed. Colorado Academy, closed. Colorado Early Colleges of Aurora, closed. Community College of Aurora, closed. Denver Academy closed, Denver Jewish Day School closed, Denver Public Schools closed, Douglas County School District closed, Elizabeth School District closed, Englewood School District closed, Jeffco Public Schools closed, Littleton Public Schools closed, Lotus School for Excellence closed, Mapleton Public Schools closed, Mullen High School closed, Regis Jesuit High School closed, Regis University is delayed and will be opening at 10 a.m. Rocky Mountain School of Expeditionary Learning closed. Strasburg School District closed. Valor Christian High School closed. And now, local headlines. Arapahoe County will be the second county in Colorado to reclassify its 911 dispatchers as first responders. Summer Taylor has the story.
Starting February 5th, Aurora County is granting its 27 dispatchers the new title of first responders, placing them in the same status as police, firefighters, and medical personnel. With its official status change, there will be a 3.5% pay increase this year, as well as better access to mental health resources. Aurora is the second community in the state to make this change. Colorado is the seventh state where at least one county has reclassified dispatcher status to first responders. Monica Million, president of the National Emergency Number Association, an industry advocacy group, told the Aurora Sentinel that the reclassification reflects a new understanding of what it means to work as a 911 dispatcher. Several national studies show that public safety workers like first responders experience a broad range of health and mental health consequences as a result of their work, including PTSD, depression, and anxiety. This shift in Aurora follows a national trend, where efforts are focused on getting the country some 100,000 emergency dispatchers better pay benefits. For KGNU, I'm Summer Taylor.
State legislators yesterday debated a bill on whether to eliminate private prisons in the state. Lucy Haggard has more.
House Bill 201019, named Prison Population Reduction and Management, would allocate $250,000 for a committee to examine how the state can phase out private prisons by 2025. The bill would not ban private prisons outright, though one prison could close. It could also make it more difficult for other states to send their prisoners to Colorado and would amend how prisoners can receive earned time or be punished for escape attempts. 20 of Colorado's 25 largest cities have at least one private prison operated by either GEO or CoreCivic. Co-sponsor of the bill, Leslie Herod, a Denver Democrat, told the Denver Post that if the state opts to go with the transition, the process would be lengthy due to existing contracts, as well as the logistics of finding more space for prisoners. Part of this could involve reopening a shuttered Canyon City prison known as CSP-2, in part to compensate for the upcoming closing of a GEO-owned prison in Colorado Springs. Critics of the bill note that rural communities would feel a significant economic impact from a potential phase-out. With the House voting in favor, 39-22, the bill now moves on to the Senate. For KGNU, I'm Lucy Haggard.
And in today's weather, winter weather advisory now until 11 o'clock tonight. Temperatures in Boulder, 24, Denver, 25, Fort Collins, 28, and up in Nederland, 13 degrees. So expect new snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches today, highs in the mid-30s, and then lows tonight in the mid-20s. Saturday, expect some melting, mostly sunny, high of 50. And tonight and going into tomorrow, snow showers start, on Saturday, expecting some melting, mostly sunny and high of 50, starting on Saturday night, and then all the way through Sunday, lows expected to be 30s. And up in Nederland, sunny and windy today, or Saturday, high of 40, and Sunday, snow showers, high of 22.
It's February. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Steve Jones, Ruth Carol Cushman, and Scott Sievers on a hike with the Boulder County Audubon Society.
Let's make a tight circle, please. Make it really tight and then we'll be warmer. We're down along Coal Creek in the Wheat Ridge Greenbelt. This is an amazing place in winter because the creek is ice-free throughout the winter. It never freezes over. And this is thanks to our friends at the Coors Brewing Company. I'll let you, use your imagination to think where the connection is there. And because this is the only permanent ice-free creek in eastern Colorado, wild ducks come here from all over to winter, including the spectacular hooded merganser. Is everyone ready?
Yes.
How would you describe the hooded mergansers, how they look?
They're a very handsome bird with this white patch. That's the diagnostic thing. When they're courting, they throw their head back and they make that patch into a big white fan and make this really weird noise in their throat.
Would you consider that noise frog-like?
I hadn't thought of it, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
When it's frozen on the lakes, it usually means there's more ducks in the creek and we get a lot closer to them. Now, on the right, we have a pair standing on a log. On the left, there's a male. And in back, there's a male who just went around the corner.
There's a pair out in the water.
So there are two pairs, yeah. You know, mergansers are also called razor bills because they have serrated bills which are good for capturing fish. And they're diving ducks. Oh, here's another one on the right of the island. Do you see him? Beautiful hoodie. So they're white in front. They have the beautiful white hood, but they're this lovely sort of tan color on their back, and they have a white stripe behind their head. Their favorite food is, guess what?
Crayfish,
yeah. They love crayfish, and we have lots of photos of them with crayfish here. A friend of mine hypothesized that it's all the beer in the water here that's nurtured all sorts of aquatic life, and that's why there's so many crayfish here.
That must be a crappy.
So, Steve, when the mergansers catch the crayfish, because crayfish are usually under a rock, do they dive?
They can dive as much as 30 feet down.
So they're pulling the crayfish off the bottom of the pond.
Here's the male really close to the ice here. If you get to see his eye, he has a beautiful dark golden eye. The hooded mergansers will mate for life, but during courtship, they're totally promiscuous. So you see a pair of hoodies there, but you'll see the other males come in and start displaying, and she could mate with anyone. When it's time to lay her eggs, she finds a woodpecker hole. You know, a third of the ducks that nest in eastern Colorado nest in woodpecker hole, a third of the species.
Really?
Common merganser, hooded merganser, wood ducks. So she'll nest in a woodpecker hole, and the male will go off far away because he's an attractive nuisance. He attracts predators to the nest, so she does all the raising of the young. And this is a new breeding species here in eastern Colorado. They start nesting along the Wheat Ridge Greenbelt area, I think about 25 or 30 years ago. I think we can continue. Are you okay to continue and start walking along the creek and see what we see there?
Yeah.
At least we got to see five hooded mergansers.
Yeah.
We'll see you.
Steve Jones, with Gerald Cushman and Scott Sievers, are friends and Boulder naturalists.
More and more people are taking individual action to adopt sustainable ways of living in the face of the ongoing climate crisis. We are also seeing changes happening at municipal and state levels with commitments to using more renewable energy. But some Colorado environmental groups say climate action should also be happening in the world of finances and investment. Lucas Turner from KDNK reports on what climate activists are doing to convince Colorado's public pension fund to divest from fossil fuels.
The Public Retirement Employees Association, commonly known as PERA, is the pension fund for public employees in Colorado, the 25th largest public pension plan in the United States. It acts as an alternative to Social Security benefits for most of its over 600,000 members. PERA uses member and employee contributions to invest in a diverse portfolio of industries, of which about 6% is currently invested in industries related to fossil fuels. But some PERA members want that to change. People like Marie Venner.
I started in PERA in, I think it was 98.
Marie Venner became a PERA member when she started working for Colorado state government. She says that was around the same time she began actively researching climate change.
As someone who's been in the public sector my whole life, I was really horrified at the extent of the problem.
Marie says once she started learning about the impacts of climate change, she began asking PERA to consider the moral and financial impacts of investing in fossil fuels.
This is something I've been asking about at every stage of the game, but I always felt like it just never went anywhere, like it was like talking into the void.
Marie says she felt that PERA wasn't responsive to her concerns as an employee, which is why she was happy to find others in Colorado who share the same concerns.
350 Colorado is a Colorado-focused nonprofit, which is working to promote solutions to address the climate crisis. And a few years ago, PERA members came to 350 Colorado and asked for some collaboration, calling on PERA to divest from fossil fuels.
Deborah McNamara is the campaign coordinator for 350 Colorado, serving as a liaison for the Fossil Free PERA Coalition, a group of PERA members and beneficiaries advocating for the pension fund to divest from fossil fuels. Deborah says the case for divestment is twofold, beginning with a moral argument.
Front and center, there's the issue of climate change and how fossil fuels and our use of fossil fuels and our investment in fossil fuels is contributing to our carbon emissions and thus the climate crisis.
The second piece of 350 Colorado and the Fossil Free PERA Coalition's argument for fossil fuel divestment is that of fiduciary responsibility.
As our culture continues to shift and as we continue to have more legislation passed and more regulations around our use of fossil fuels, we're looking at a high likelihood of stranded assets. Those are fossil fuels that will become unburnable in the wake of technological advancements and our transition to more renewable energy and the increased global commitments to curb climate change. So we really want PERA to be taking a very close look at this.
The Fossil Free PERA Coalition's early efforts to encourage PERA to divest from fossil fuels started with a petition signed by over 1,000 PERA members and beneficiaries calling on PERA's Board of Trustees to conduct studies that would assess climate-related financial risk. In response, PERA's Board of Trustees released a formal statement on divestment at the start of 2018. It lists four reasons why the board opposes divestment efforts, first arguing that divestment in and of itself poses risks by limiting diversification. Second, pointing out costs associated with divestment, including the cost of potentially reduced returns, among others. Third, saying all money administered by PERA immediately becomes part of a trust fund, meaning it is no longer considered public or state money. And fourth, noting that widespread divestment is meant to impair economic resources required for companies to operate, which could result in an array of unintended economic consequences. PERA's Board of Trustees say for these reasons, it would oppose any divestment efforts unless A, the opposition was inconsistent with the board's fiduciary responsibility, or B, divestment was mandated by the Colorado General Assembly. Following the statement on divestment from PARA, the Fossil Free PARA Coalition went straight to the legislature to run House Bill 19-1270. The bill would have mandated PARA's Board of Trustees to administer a study that would analyze any climate-related financial risk to the total assets of PARA. It was assigned to the Colorado House Committee on Finance and Appropriations, where 8 out of 10 committee members voted to postpone the bill indefinitely.
And we found that to be very disappointing and discouraging, because all we were asking at that time was, let's just take a closer look at this. So when that proposed study through the legislature did not move forward, the Fossil Free PARA Coalition decided to raise the money ourselves and conduct a third-party unbiased study looking at PARA's fossil fuel investments and how they've been performing over time.
The Fossil Free PARA Coalition chose Toronto-based media and analysis firm Corporate Knights to conduct the study. Analyzing PARA's publicly disclosed holdings over the last decade, the study found that by divesting in fossil fuels in 2009, the pension fund would have generated an additional $1.77 billion in revenue. After those results were published, PARA declined our requests for an interview, opting instead for a pre-written statement.
The PARA board has been made aware of the Corporate Knights study. The methodology used in that study is flawed, as it implies that PARA should have made investment decisions in 2009 using information from 2019.
Corporate Knights CEO Toby Heaps then responded to PARA's statement.
The study wasn't meant to pin blame on anybody. It was just meant to provide insight as to, you know, what the opportunity cost has been for hanging on to fossil fuel stocks. I don't think anyone had a crystal ball 10 years ago.
Toby Heaps also defended the methodology of the study.
So we work closely with S&P, Standard & Poor's, IQ Capital, which is one of the most sophisticated, reliable calculators and backtesters of portfolios in the world, to design the unbiased methodology possible to, in order to test the question of how would the portfolio have performed had it not been invested in fossil fuels over the past 10 years. And we found over the past 10 years, 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, it didn't matter. It performed better without fossil fuels, and we found that the more fossil fuels that were screened out of the portfolio, the better it performed. And that's consistent with other studies that have been done by us and other actors.
Toby says the analysis firm wasn't surprised by the study's findings because they reflect larger trends in the energy sector.
This trend is quite discernible now. It's running several years, and we have a good solid decade to look back on. So I think it's not fair to blame Coalpera for the opportunity costs and the billions that have been foregone as a result of sticking to fossil fuels over the past 10 years. But I think increasingly looking forward, if Coalpera stays within fossil fuels, with these trends continuing and continues to bear an opportunity cost for the people, the pensioners and the beneficiaries, I think then it becomes something that, you know, they could be held to account for.
You can find links to PARA's statements on divestments as well as the Corporate Knights analysis at kdnk.org. This is KDNK News. I'm Lucas Turner.
Despite this week's snow, the organizers of this year's Winter Bike and Walk to Work Week are hoping to lure people out of their cars and onto their bikes. Maeve Conran spoke with Will Shepherd with Go Boulder.
We see cycling as something that's possible year-round, and Go Boulder, which actually stands for Great Options in Commuting, clean commuting being one of those great options.
What is clean commuting?
Clean commuting is a new form that we're starting to use with some of our community partners, and it's just thinking about the impact and alternative of your commute. So that could be walking, that could be biking, that could be an employer setting a cash out program to incentivize not driving, or even if you do drive to and from work, just choosing to walk, bike, take transit for an errand during the day or go get lunch instead of hopping in your car again for that extra trip.
I think a lot of people feel pressurized that it's all or nothing. You must do your entire commute, whether you're commuting to South Denver or Fort Collins or even down the street, and you must change your entire transportation to make it not in a car. But I've heard from other folks in previous years that even if people transition part of that commute, that can actually, well, first of all, have a domino effect, and that can actually make a really big impact.
Absolutely. I personally and us professionally see a multitude of benefits for what we would call mode shift. And so that's a partial or complete translation or change from one mode to another. But what you're getting at there is what we usually refer to as multimodal. So someone might need to drive from their home to their work, but maybe they could use one of our bike share systems to go for a quick ride to take a 15-minute break and reset before they have a radio interview. I personally rode down the bike path today, and I felt it was a really great way to get energized, excited, and sort of clear my mind from what I'd been working on this morning. So I definitely encourage folks as a starting point to explore our path system, whether you're walking, biking, rollerblading, just going with a friend down to the creek. 5 or 10 minutes on our network can make a pretty nice difference, and we'll get into some of those options for Winter Walk and Bike Week. But I think you made a great point of it's possible to get caught thinking you need to completely change your patterns and that's too much, so folks just don't do it. But one mode at a time might be kind of a fun mantra for folks to try. And again, if you look at your lunch break and where you usually go, if you don't bring your lunch to the office, getting to that place back and forth, especially if you can use a bike lane or the path system, that's a great way to do it. And if you bring your lunch to work, it's a great way to take 20 minutes and work up an appetite beforehand or kind of digest a little bit afterwards.
We're going to get into exactly what people can expect from Winter Walk and Bike to Work Day. That day is February 14th, but really there's a week of events starting February 6th. Of course, people are familiar with what happens in June. That's the big Walk and Bike to Work Week events. Winter, less people, a bit colder, maybe a bit of ice, or it could be a day like today where it's completely dry. Is it very seasonal? Do you see a lot less people in winter just because of the weather playing a factor?
I would say it's a day-by-day thing. A few years ago, I experienced an unseasonably warm ride, and last year, I think it was maybe 7 degrees. So time will tell as it comes into Valentine's Day. One way to sort of prepare a little bit is talk with your friends, talk with your coworkers, see where they live, and maybe do an advanced planning for what the route would be in good conditions or bad conditions. If it looks like it's going to be snowy or rainy, maybe you could carpool together. Maybe some folks could meet at a park and ride and take transit together and then walk a little bit. It's not exclusively a walking and biking event. We want to celebrate a lot of things. And there's a few different options on the international website, which is winterbiketoworkday.org. And we're not partial to one or the other modes. It is a bike to work day. And that's sort of the momentum that gets all these local businesses to set up breakfast stations. Community Cycles is a great partner of ours, and they're going to have a variety of clinics leading up to the event. So if you haven't ridden your bike in a while and you either want to take it in and learn how to tune it a little bit or just get them to help you get the bike ready to ride, that's great. They're going to offer classes in English and Spanish. So we'd love to have the entirety of our community in Boulder here reached by any language that they're speaking. And we have some other events that I can speak to as well.
Please
getting
do.
Into the Bike to Work Day itself.
Yeah, like give us a sense of some of the other things that are going to be happening.
Sunday, February 9th, we're going to do a public art tour by bicycle. So folks will meet at Eben G. Fine Park near 2nd and Canyon, 2nd and Arapaho, and they'll explore the path system down towards foothills, seeing murals and little detours along the way by bike. That is limited to 25 people, so check out Eventbrite for the details on that one. Some of our open space and mountain park rangers who are in wheelchairs are going to do an accessibility event at the main branch of the Boulder Public Library that Tuesday, which is February 11th. And that's free and open to the public. They'll have a variety of chairs where folks can experience checking out a book, ordering a coffee at the cafe on the bridge, even using the restroom in a wheelchair to sort of understand how folks who don't walk and bike get around every day. Our partner Darcy with Boulder Walks is going to do two cool events, one on Wednesday the 12th, where folks will meet at Innisfree Cafe up on the hill. They're going to explore different murals around town using reusable coffee mugs, so you'll have a warm beverage while you're out on a two-hour stroll. There's going to be a meditative walk that Naropa University is hosting along the pathway. So for the full list of these event details, you can check out goboulder.net and do a search for Winter Walk and Bike Week, and we'll have the details listed there. But our partners with Shared Paths, Boulder Walks, Naropa, Open Space, and Mountain Parks are all coming together to make a really great thing leading up to Bike to Work Day on Valentine's Day.
Yeah, and on February 14th, there will be breakfast stations around the community. I know KGNU is hosting one as well. So that'll be listed all at that website. Will Shepherd, is there anything else you think people need to know?
We have a new vision coming in called Bike Love 2020. A lot of our programs are multimodal, but we do want to sort of share the love for bicycles. And I think that can extend out of how bikes interact with pedestrians, how they interact with vehicles, and how Boulder collectively becomes a great place to love biking.
And that was Will Shepherd with Go Boulder. KGNU's Boulder Studio will be hosting a breakfast station next Friday morning, and you can find a list of all the breakfast stations and other events at goboulder.net.